Have you been listening to the podcast and getting value from the show? If so, I've got a small favor to ask, because over the next few months, we're going to be making some changes to better serve you. Now, I could keep creating episodes based on what I think would be most helpful, but I would much rather get this right. So instead of guessing, I want to understand where you are right now and the real challenges you, your organization, and your team are facing. That's why I've put together a very short 90-second survey. It'll help me better understand you and how I can serve you at a much higher level. And as a thank you, the first 30 people who complete it will receive a free signed copy of one of our books. To take part, just go to the show notes and click the link titled Leadership Survey. Or you can go directly to letsgrowleaders.com/podsurvey. PODSURVEY. It'll take less than 2 minutes. I really appreciate your input. It will genuinely help shape the future of the show. In this episode, you're going to get 6 advanced techniques to lead meetings that get results and that people actually want to attend. Welcome to Leadership Without Losing Your Soul, a podcast helping human-centered leaders master communication to accelerate your team's performance, reduce stress, and build a career with the respect and influence you deserve. I'm your host, David Dye, president of Let's Grow Leaders. Hey, welcome to the show. It is a cliche that people hate meetings, isn't it? But in this episode, you're going to get specific leadership tools that are going to help you lead meetings that get results. You'll be able to increase buy-in and energize your team, and you're also going to get better ideas and turn those ideas into action. So let's get into it. Too many meetings are genuinely a waste of time. They don't accomplish anything. Minutes creep along while the meeting leader fritters away everyone's time. People have meaningless conversations that don't solve problems. Everyone's frustrated that they could be doing something more productive with their time. And if the meeting's online, then you've got people multitasking or wishing that they could. So when you don't run meetings well, not only do your results suffer, so does your leadership credibility. But bad meetings, while they might be a cliche, aren't inevitable. In fact, I maintain that people don't actually hate meetings. They hate bad meetings. They hate those soul-sucking wastes of time. And so I want to give you 6 techniques, these advanced techniques you can use to ensure your meetings are effective and energizing and ultimately result in something happening, action, motivation, morale boost. Okay, so let's start with 1. Don't waste their time. This is one of the biggest reasons that people hate meetings, because they abuse our most precious resource, our time. So if you want to be an effective leader, treat everyone's time as a precious resource. Start and end on time. That's a basic meeting skill. So when you carelessly let meetings run long or start late or have a meeting you should never have called in the first place, you're disrespecting your people. So if starting and ending on time is a basic technique, what's the advanced technique? The advanced technique to avoid wasting people's time is to hold meetings only when they are the most valuable use of all of the attendees' time. If there's something that that person could be doing that's more valuable, more productive, that contributes more directly to the team and to the results you're trying to accomplish, why on earth would you want them in that meeting knowing they're being less productive? Now, there's lots of ways that person can contribute value. Maybe they have expertise that only they have. Maybe it's good for their own development. There are a lot of variations on that. Or maybe they have direct input in the decision-making, or they're going to be one of the people responsible for implementing. Lots of different ways people can intersect. But if they're not having this be a valuable use of their time, you're wasting their time, your meeting's going to stink. You can't start, you can't pass go, you can't get anything else done if you're wasting people's time. So make sure it's a valuable use of their time. And related to that, 2 is you want to know your outcomes. So this goes back to relationships and results. We talk about landing in the end, focusing everything you're doing as a leader on building relationships and achieving results. How do you make sure your meeting's a good use of time? Start with the purpose. What outcome will this meeting achieve? It should be in the meeting invitation. Everybody should know coming into the meeting. And how will it help the people who attend to achieve results and build relationships? So let's focus on that first outcome of results for just a second. Your meeting should move the mission of your group, your team, your organization forward. In short, what does that mean? Meetings should produce action. Now, you might not be able to get to a decision, get to action every time. Sometimes it's going to take a series of conversations. That's okay. But you should know what is the ultimate action that's going to come out of this meeting, out of this conversation. You got together to solve a problem, to make a decision, or share information. And when the meeting ends, it's time to do something. So if your meeting doesn't result in clear action, you're wasting your time. And you're wasting your people's time, even worse. And then you've got the outcome of relationships. You know, business results often take center stage, but relationships are also a critical outcome of effective meetings, especially for teams who work virtually or in a hybrid environment. But it doesn't matter. Every team, relationships are a part, one of the outcomes of your meetings. Teams require trust, and that's only built through time spent together, working together, solving problems, making decisions, learning how everyone operates, how they see the world, how they share information. So in addition to the connections that you build through working together and solving problems, you can also include specific conversations that are going to build relationships. Things like cultural conversations to problem solve or celebrate. For example, if you ask, what's really getting in the way of people using our new system? Or what have you seen another member do well over the last month? So those kinds of cultural conversations. Or maybe you have elephant in the room conversations. You're not going to have these every time, but once in a while, for example, hey, what are the conversations we're not having that we should be having? Or mutual help conversations. Let's talk about how we're working with other departments. What's working well? Where do we have challenges? And give people a chance to share and help one another. So those are all examples of the kinds of conversations you might inject periodically in your meetings to help build the relationships, build the trust level. These conversations can happen quickly, and they can be a rich source of positive relationships and results as your people learn to trust each other and help one another. So effective teams meet frequently. You want to be certain the meetings you hold are effective, that they're the best use of every attendee's time by focusing every meeting on how it's going to achieve results and how it will build the relationships of everyone involved. If your meeting isn't going to build relationships and advance the mission of the organization, don't have the meeting. All right, how about number three, our advanced techniques to hold meetings that get results people want to attend. We got to have the right people in the room. And I'm going to put room in quotes here because, of course, that could be a virtual room, could be a conference call, could be an actual room. So who should attend the meeting? Here's the way to think about it. You want the smallest number of stakeholders that are going to allow you to make the best decision. And the way I like to think about this is there's a continuum of the number of people you could have in your meeting. On one end, you can hold the meeting by yourself. You'd look a little silly, but you could sit there by yourself, examine what you know, reflect, make a decision, and then share that decision with everyone else. So that's one end of the continuum. You meet by yourself. On the other end of the continuum, you could have every single person in the organization attend a meeting. If you have a 50-person organization, all 50 of them would be there. Maybe unwieldy, but if you work in a 10,000-person organization, of course, it'd be absolutely impossible. So the question is, between those two ends of the spectrum, what's the smallest number of people who can attend but still provide a good, diverse, informed input from everyone who has a stake in the decision? And where most leaders go wrong is that they'll invite too many people who have the same perspective, but then they fail to invite key representatives with different vantage points who would help them make a better decision if they'd had that input. And particularly one of the most overlooked groups are the people affected by decisions. So remember, the goal of most meetings is to take action. When you take people away from their normal work, you want to do it so all of you together can make a better decision than you would have done on your own. So once again, you'll waste everyone's time if you don't have the right people there, if you don't invite the necessary people to the meeting. Smallest number of stakeholders to make the best decision. That's an optimization exercise, and it takes a little practice. And you can ask as you're putting together a meeting, hey, listen, in order to make the best decision here, who needs to be here? Who am I not considering? Okay, let's get to number four. Clarify the intent. This is where you're going to answer the question, what kind of meeting are you leading? There are only a couple types of business meetings. And the two most common ones are, the first type is an informational meeting. These are usually very short, you're just exchanging information. And the key to an informational meeting is that there is an exchange of information. It's not just information going in one direction. And an informational meeting is not you pulling people together because it's more convenient for you. Remember, the meeting needs to be the most valuable use of their time as well. And this can happen if there's an honest exchange, an opportunity to ask questions, interaction around the information being shared, and the meeting's brief. So if you have a stand-up huddle at the beginning of a shift, or a quick briefing on a new initiative where you do some Q&A, those are examples of informational meetings. The second type of meeting, and this is the more traditional, or maybe not traditional, but the most common type of meeting, is where you're making decisions and ultimately taking action. Most of your meetings are going to fall into this category, or at least most of your time in meetings should fall into this category. You may have those, like I said, huddles, shift, informational types of things at the beginning of shifts and quick stand-ups. Things like that might be common. But where you're putting the time in are on these decision-making meetings that result in action. And these can take anywhere from 15 minutes to 2 hours. And they're going to feature a specific decision to make or a problem to solve. And a problem really is just a specific kind of decision. So the key to making meetings work for you, your team, is you want to be very clear about what kind of meeting you've called. If you mix up an information exchange with decision-making, it frustrates everybody. If you want to solve a specific problem, don't allow a team member to turn the meeting into a briefing on her latest project unless it specifically helps the group solve the problem at hand. And the other way around too, if you've got somebody running an information meeting or you're running an informational meeting or a quick stand-up, you don't allow that one guy to say, we really need to decide this and hijack the meeting and turn it into something it's not supposed to be. Stay focused on the specific objective for the meeting you're leading. In doing that, you help everyone know how to contribute. It creates trust that people know exactly what's going on and they can count on it. It reduces that uncertainty. That is one of the reasons that people get frustrated with business meetings. But we're not done yet. We've got some more skills here. Number five, clarify who owns the decision. All right, let me give you the symptom of this one. If you've ever heard, or maybe you've said it, this is so stupid. You asked for my opinion and then you ignored it. I don't know why I even bother. From now on, I'm just going to shut my mouth and do my work. When you or someone you know says that, you're experiencing a lack of clarity around who owns the decision. And people hate feeling ignored. I mean, unfortunately, when you ask for input and appear to ignore it, people are going to feel frustrated, devalued, powerless. That's just human nature. In contrast, when you're clear about who owns the decision, how it will be made, people can readily contribute and they're far more likely to own the outcome. So one of the best ways you can increase buy-in is to clarify who owns the decision. And the good news is this is not hard to do because there are only four ways you can make a decision. And you're really only going to use three of those. All right, so the first one is a single person makes the decision. Typically, this would be the meeting leader or someone that she appoints. So in this style of decision making, you might ask your team for input and let them know that after hearing everyone's perspective, you'll make the call. There's nothing wrong with that. Sometimes that's your job. So that's a single person makes the decision. Get input, one person makes the call. Second way to do it is voting. So you've got a group, this in majority rules, some kind of majority. Maybe it's 50% plus one, maybe it's 2/3, but it's a vote. And so with this option, you ask everyone to contribute input and they know that the decision will be made by a vote at a specific time. The third way that a group can make a decision is through consensus. And many times people get confused about consensus. Consensus is not everyone is happy, gets their first choice. That's not what it means. Consensus decision-making means that the group continues discussion until everyone can live with the decision. I was working one time with a group and consensus kind of had become a dirty word in their culture, because what it really meant was that one senior leader just kept badgering everybody until they finally agreed to do what he wanted them to do. That's not consensus either. Consensus is an honest conversation, and you continue talking until everyone can live with an outcome. Doesn't mean everyone gets their his or her first choice, but that everyone can live with the final decision. And obviously, that can take more time, but sometimes that might be appropriate because it increases everyone's ownership of the final decision. And then the final, I mentioned that there were four. So those first three, single person decides, a vote, or consensus, those are your most common ways to make a decision. The fourth one, rarely used in business settings. You let fate make the call. You're going to flip a coin, roll a die, draw from a hat. And sometimes, if time's of the essence, stakes are really low, the pro and con list is super evenly matched, it's just pick an option and go. For example, if you have 45 minutes for lunch, it doesn't make any sense to spend 30 minutes of that discussing options. Narrow it down to a few places, flip a coin, and move. So each of those ways of deciding has advantages, but what's most important is that you're very clear about which way the decision's being made. Who owns the decision? So that person who said, hey, you asked for my opinion and then you ignored it, I don't even know why I bother, they were under the impression that there was going to be a vote or consensus, when in reality, there was another person making the call. And that kind of confusion is demotivating and it wastes tons of precious time and energy. So instead, before discussion begins, state how the decision will be made. Be specific. For example, you might begin a decision-making session by saying, okay, I'd like to spend the next 40 minutes getting everyone's input, and then I'll make the call. Or you might describe the decision to be made and say, we're not going to move forward until everyone can live with the decision. You can even combine the methods and say, we're going to discuss this for 30 minutes. If we can come to a consensus by then, that would be great. If not, we'll give it another 15 minutes. After that, if we still don't have consensus, I'll take a final round of feedback from everyone and I'll choose. Or then we'll vote. You'll avoid wasted energy, you'll energize people, you'll empower your people to be more influential, because when they know who owns the decision, they also know how to share their information. Do they need to persuade the single decision maker? Do they need to persuade the majority, influence everyone else? What is the call they want to make? Is it the entire team? They can choose the most relevant information and the arguments that they want to get in there. All right, let's go to number six here, talking about how to lead meetings that get results that people want to attend. Well, the critical part of all this, we've had good discussion, we've established our intent, maybe we've put some criteria in there. If I had to add a bonus one that we haven't mentioned yet, it would be establish your decision-making criteria up front. What's a successful outcome going to do for you so that you have some way to evaluate, people can measure against it? But once we've done all of those things, identified who owns the decision, made the decision, great. Now it's time to turn those meetings into results. So if this sounds familiar to you, this last one, number six, is for you. You go to a meeting, you've got invigorating discussions, you look at the alternatives, you come up with a cool plan of action. Everyone leaves the meeting feeling motivated. Then 6 weeks later, you get back together. And as everyone enters the room, takes their seat, there are those sideways glances. Hey, did you do that thing we talked about? Nah, man, how about you? Did you do it? Quick shake of the head, and you realize that great idea everyone talked about has languished, died on the vine. The prior meeting, the discussions, the new meeting, all of it were a waste of time because nothing happened. In fact, it's worse than doing nothing because now you've created negative energy. That feeling of, you know, it doesn't matter what we talk about. Nothing around here really changes. And that sucks the life and energy out of your team. So you don't want to let that happen. Every meeting you hold should produce activities that move results forward. And that's going to build momentum. It's going to build morale and build healthy relationships and trust. And you can do all of that in just 5 minutes at the end of every meeting. So let's start with mindset here. I want you to think about meetings as commitment creators. In other words, the outcome for every decision-making or problem-solving meeting you ever have is to create commitment. You get the right people together to discuss the problem, you make a decision, and people commit to doing something. The product of a good meeting is a commitment to activity, and then the activity itself. So to build that commitment, there are three questions you want to use. And these questions are ways that you can help your team to schedule the finish. And we'll continue to investigate and explore scheduling the finish in future episodes. But scheduling the finish is about having a conversation that's going to result in action, where you first start by looking at competing priorities. Is this feasible? But ultimately, it results in a calendar appointment with anybody involved so that there's a natural follow through. So at the end of a meeting like this, there are three questions you want to ask. First, who will do what? Until someone actually does something, nothing's changed from before you made the decision. It's just a nice idea. So every task needs a specific person who's responsible to complete it. It's not all of us. It's not some of us. It's not everyone. Names. And for smaller decisions, there might only be one or two answers. For larger strategic initiatives, you might have an entire work plan that outlines dozens of tasks and different people responsible. But who is responsible for doing what? The second question is, by when? Pretty straightforward. What's the finish line for the tasks people have agreed to complete? When these finish lines are shared and publicly available, everyone's more likely to meet them. And then the third question really gets at the heart of scheduling the finish. How will we know? So let me give you a quick example. I've been in so many of these kinds of conversations. One person shrugs, "You know, Linda, I don't know why you're upset. I did those updates." And Linda's team had decided to launch a new product that involved so many moving parts, they'd clearly answered the first two questions, who does what and by when. And for the most part, everyone kept to their commitments, but the delivery date kept slipping. And when Linda goes and investigates, she discovers that there were some people who had done what they said they'd do, but there was still something missing. Linda and the other team members couldn't always take the next step until that other person finished their piece. Well, he'd finished this piece, but he never let anyone know. He'd moved on to other work, diligently crossing items off his to-do list while the overall project sat idle. So in big projects, you might have a project manager or maybe a project management software that ensures this type of next step communication happens. But what about more ordinary day-to-day meetings? Where's that accountability? How will we know is the magic question that moves your meetings from good intentions to actions and results. And it's also the one that leaders most frequently ignore. So we know who's doing what, and we know by when, but how will we know closes the loop from intention to action and builds that momentum without you having to spend hours tracking down every action step. So here's how it works. Someone completes a task. What do they do next? Will they pass the results to another person in the group? Are they going to update the team and let them know? Will they make a presentation of his findings? Will she report completion in a common area or software? Is there going to be a conversation between that person and maybe one or two other people about next steps or what they did or what the next person needs to do? And the specific answers depend on the task and the project. What matters is that the accountability and next steps are baked into the decision. Everyone knows what they're accountable to do. The team knows if it's been completed, and no one's left waiting around for the information that she needs. And I'd encourage you, don't let the simplicity of those questions fool you into not using them. In fact, we have seen so many leaders, thousands of managers and leaders who struggle to get frustrated because they didn't ensure this kind of clarity and start adding those questions to the end of their meeting agendas and tell us afterwards, these are the most important 5 minutes you'll spend to make your meetings achieve results. So these six strategies go beyond traditional and true meeting advice to have an agenda, start or end on time. You absolutely need to do those things. But use these techniques to ensure you're leading meetings that get results that people want to attend. Start with that mindset. Don't waste their time. Make sure you're inviting people to something that's the most productive use of their time. Know your outcomes. What are the results you need to achieve? The decisions you need to make? What are the relationships that you need to build? How are you going to do that? Get the right people in the room, smallest number of stakeholders to make the best decision. 4, clarify your intent. What kind of meeting are you having? 5, critically important, the beginning of the discussion, clarify who owns the decision. And then finally, 6, turn those meetings into results by asking those 3 questions. Who will do what, by when, and how will we know? I can promise you, if you do those 6 things consistently, you are going to have productive, energizing meetings that build results, build relationships, and you got a reputation to be a leader whose people want to attend the meetings that you're leading. All right, if you enjoyed this episode, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any of these practical communication skills to help you accelerate your team's performance, reduce stress, and build a career with the respect and influence that you deserve. And if you want a guide that you can print out and use to walk your team through these skills together, communication skills that are going to help them reduce their stress, improve everyone's morale and productivity, you'll find a great resource to help you do that at letsgrowleaders.com/podcast. Thank you, as always, to our producer and sound engineer, Brooke Bradford, over at Sheep and Space Digital Business Services, and Laura at Brook Marketing for their work on this episode. Until next time, lead at those effective meetings and be the leader you'd want your boss to be.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.